In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, it's time for Pass the Popcorn. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Hello, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you this Monday afternoon?
I'm good.
How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Yeah, I had a pretty good one. It was the first one in a while where I didn't really have anything going on, which was kind of nice.
I bet, yeah. I want to get your thoughts. We asked Mike Lowe about it. Your reflections on the death of Stan Lee.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, and we've talked about it a little bit here and there over the years, but I was a big comic book kid growing up. Still am to a large extent. And I was always a Marvel guy. So the idea that someone who brought so many of my, like, so many characters that were huge parts of my adolescence, I mean, first and foremost is Spider-Man. Like, I was a Spider-Man kid. I remain a Spider-Man guy. With great power comes great responsibility is one of the greatest lessons I've ever learned in my life. Like inside a classroom, outside a classroom, whatever. But a lot of Lee's work did that same sort of thing for me, where whether it was, you know, the power of societal ostracism through the X-Men, or the value of finding the right network of teammates around you through the Avengers, or the damaging power of unchecked anger from the Hulk, like all these really valuable lessons. Sort of very neatly tucked beneath the brightly colored surface of these comic book characters. Like, that's stuff that, you know, when you're reading that when you're 8, 9, 10 years old, like, that resonates and that sticks with you. But again, it's really a tragedy. It's not, I mean, the guy was 95 years old, so it's not like it comes as a huge shock. His wife, his long beloved wife passed away just a few months ago in July. So that's kind of how it goes sometimes when you have these long-term married couples. When one goes, the other's not far behind. And, you know, he had been failing for a little while. And so it's tragic, but you have to imagine that, you know, he's in a better place right now. And I imagine that the eulogization will go on for days and days from here on in from people across the spectrum, because we were all affected by him in some way, shape, or form, as a, you know, and it's just one of those things where it's like, if you told me 30 years ago that superhero movies would be billion-dollar businesses, I would have clapped with delight and then called you a dirty liar. And so it just goes to show you how the world has changed, and how much of it, at least in terms of the entertainment world, Stan Lee had to do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. What'd you see for movies this weekend?
You know, I didn't have anything to do, so I saw a bunch.
Well, good.
Yeah. No, I actually saw three.
Woo!
This weekend.
All right.
Well, I'll give you the titles, and okay, you can tell me how you want to go.
All right.
We have The Grinch.
Yeah.
We have The Girl in the Spider's Web.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Overlord.
Okay. Well, let's start with Overlord.
Okay.
Which is the one that I know the least about.
Look, genre mashup is difficult to pull off. Like, when you bring together two disparate types of things and sort of make them into one thing, you have to really walk a fine line. When the two genres you're putting together are World War II and horror, that's an even finer line that needs to be walked. But I have to tell you, I don't know if I had a better time in a movie theater this year than watching Overlord.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
wow.
It was an absolute delight. It's produced by J.J. Abrams, but it's really remarkable. It's basically, the basic gist is you have these soldiers. It's the day before D-Day, the Normandy invasion, and you have this team of soldiers who have been assigned to take out this radio tower that's in the steeple of a church in this French village. Like, that's their mission. They have to take out this radio tower in order to ensure that the troops can safely get to the beaches on D-Day. And so this is a hugely important mission. But in the process of going to this mission, their plane gets shot down. And so there's this incredible opening sequence where you have all these soldiers and this plane is just breaking apart around them. And our lead character, a soldier named Boyce, we follow him out of the plane as he jumps. And it's from his perspective that we're, and he's like spinning and dropping and like things exploding all around him. It's one of the most, it's just this weirdly tight and intense kind of sequence. He lands safely, but only a couple of his cohort land safely as well, including the sort of mission commander, the Corporal Ford, played by Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son.
Oh, wow.
So they land in the woods. They sort of evade notice by the Nazis, and they come across this French woman who lives in the village. They quickly convince her that they're not bad guys. They're here to, you know, sort of help. And she agrees to bring them into her home and hide them in her attic while they plan, you know, what they're going to do next. There are little hints of like weirdness, like at the sort of periphery, but for the most part, it's playing pretty much as a straightforward, albeit fairly aggressive sort of World War II movie. They're in the house. The evil Nazi commander shows up, I can't remember the actor's name, but he was delightfully evil in all the right Nazi ways. Circumstances lead to the soldiers revealing themselves and taking him captive, and so they have to, they're accelerated their timeline, so they have to sort of undertake this mission. What soon becomes clear is that while the radio tower is a thing, and it's a very important thing, there's a lot more going on in this town than they were led to believe. In the sort of tunnels beneath this church, there's an evil Nazi doctor doing evil Nazi doctor things that involve developing some sort of serum to turn dead people into zombie soldiers that will survive the entire breadth of the Thousand-Year Reich.
Alrighty then.
And so the soldiers not only have to destroy this radio tower to, you know, help the invasion, they also have to fight off evil Nazi zombies try to figure out a way to destroy this lab without any sort of outbreak or allowing any of this technology to leave this village. It's awesome.
Really?
It's just awesome. And it's like, it's super like brutal and like gory in this visceral way, like, but all like practical effects, like not a lot of CGI. And so it's like, it feels very old school in that way. Like they, even like the opening credits are reminiscent of the old war movies of the 50s. Like they really kind of do their best to sort of blend those flavors in a way that you don't anticipate. And it's, there are a couple of pretty intense moments. There are some twists and turns that are really engaging. But the reality is it's just a pure sort of throwback kind of a movie. It's like, it's got this, you know, it's basically a B movie, with a sort of, like A level commitment behind it. Like whether you're talking about talent in front of or behind the camera or just investment in making something good. And so like everyone's so committed to this admittedly ludicrous conceit that it plays so well and it's so entertaining. And again, there are moments where they really find ways to capture the sort of weird paranoia that comes with war, especially the idea of being sort of isolated behind enemy lines. Like they treat it like a real war movie, which is something I don't think I was expecting going into it, because I just felt it was going to be, you know, oh, okay, it's soldiers fighting zombies. Okay, I've seen this before, but I haven't seen anything like this before. And so it was one of those experiences that was so much better than I anticipated that I walked out like I was grinning ear to ear, and I was like, I can't believe how good that movie was. And I'm sitting here now after, you know, a few days after having seen it, I still can't believe how good that movie was.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Overlord. Alan loves it. All right, how about the girl in the spider web with a tattoo in a place we can't talk about, whatever it is?
Look, first of all, the original Millennium Trilogy of movies based on the Stieg Larsson novels are excellent. They are considered to be excellent across the board by people who know a lot more about this than I do. The American take on Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, directed by David Fincher, Rooney Mara was in it, Daniel Craig, also well-received, although apparently not well-received enough for them to continue forward with the original trilogy. So this movie is actually based on the first post-Stieg Larsson Millennium book.
Okay.
Because the three... Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Girl Who Played with Fire, Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. Those three were all published posthumously because Stieg Larsson died before these books were even published. They were so successful that the publishing house was like, hey, David Langerkatz, will you write more of these? And so he said, I assume they backed up a truck of money, and he said yes. And so the first one of those was The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is... the adaptation that we have here. This time it stars Claire Foy, who's phenomenally talented. No, I don't think anyone could dispute that. Like, she was great in The Crown. She did fantastic work in First Man, which came out just last month. And she's really great here. Unfortunately, the movie that surrounds her great performance, less than stellar. Here's the thing. This is one of those iconic characters, but they've basically dropped her into a movie that, I mean, could have been any, like, it could have started, basically the names, like, it had the names of familiar characters and a couple of, you know, sort of baseline characteristics, but for the most part, didn't really matter who these people were. It's just your standard sort of overwrought, like, techno action thriller. The plot, for those who care, it's, you know, Lisbeth Salander, that's Claire Foy, has sort of reinvented herself as a kind of vigilante, you know, exacting vengeance on men who have done wrong by women, and that's kind of her thing. She's also a sort of hacker slash espionage agent for hire, because of course she is. She gets hired by a scientist from the NSA, played by Stephen Merchant of all people. He's invented something called Firefall, which apparently, when downloaded onto your computer, allows you to access all satellite communications, specifically those involving nuclear defense systems. So basically, your laptop can launch all the missiles if you have Firefall. A quick aside here. I don't know that I've ever experienced a movie, and this is saying something because Hollywood has long had a problem with this. I don't know that I've ever experienced a movie that treated computers as magically as this movie does. It's like all she has to do is look cross-eyed at a computer and it does whatever she says. I understand that there's a lot to not understand about how computers work. Like, I get that. But you don't just leap to it's magic. But that's kind of what they do. Mm. Anyway, so she's like, okay, I have to, you know, steal this. He's like, I don't want Firefall to fall into the wrong hands. So will you steal it? And she's like, sure. She steals it. But she gets kind of caught in the act by an NSA agent played by Lakeith Stanfield, of who's excellent.
Yeah.
And he's not in time to stop her. So, but he's in time to trace her because, again, convenience. So it's off to Sweden to track her down so he can get Firefall back for the government. Only it turns out there are a lot of people who are looking for Firefall. There's a lot of people out there who just want to be able to launch missiles, apparently. So there's, you know, there are various government agencies, a shadowy gang known only as the Spiders, hence the title. And Lisbeth Salander doesn't know who she can trust anymore. And so she goes to the guy she always goes to, Michael Blomkvist, journalist, former owner of Millennium Magazine, played by some Swedish guy who I'd never seen before and probably will never see again in this version, and enlists his help to sort of figure out who the Spiders are and who else might be trying to get hold of Firefall and to keep it from falling into the wrong hands where apparently, you know, missiles will be launched or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just...
If you like the books, you probably like the movie.
You'll be fine, I guess. But the reality is, like, this, it's just so much of the nuance of the character has been lost at this point that it's just like, yeah, she's basically just like a... I mean, and she's a superhero in all but name. And it's just like, and that's not who the character, I think, is meant to be. And so, and again, if you have any understanding of how computers work, you're going to be frustrated on numerous occasions watching this movie.
All right, let's get to the third one. The Grinch. All right, I love The Grinch. I'm still a big fan of Boris Karloff's 50-year-old version. I thought the live-action version might have been one of the worst movies ever made. This has to be better, and I'm a little bit optimistic because it's the folks who did Despicable Me, right?
Yeah, it's the folks from Illumination. They've done the Despicable Me franchise, The Secret Life of Pets, which is a movie I really enjoyed. And it's The Grinch. You don't need me to tell you the story of The Grinch. Like, everybody knows The Grinch. Is this movie necessary? I think that's the big question.
Right.
I don't believe it is. That's not to say it was bad. I don't think it is. I don't think it's a bad movie. Again, it's an extremely low bar, but it clears the Jim Carrey version. Which was directed by Ron Howard, which I had completely blocked out of my head until I was researching for writing this review. And I was just like, oh, God, Opie, what are you doing? But anyway, it's the standard stuff. Grinch hates Christmas. Whoville loves Christmas. Grinch wants to steal Christmas from Whoville. There's some other stuff. Some pretty bleak backstory for the Grinch kind of inserted in there. That's a little unsettling. Like the reason, sort of giving him a rationale for hating Christmas, which I didn't care for, only because I don't want him to have a reason, if that makes sense. I've always in the, you know, in the old Boris Karloff version, like the Grinch was more just like a force of nature. Like he wasn't like motivated by the same sorts of like things that normal humans are motivated by. He was just the Grinch. He Grinched around and Grinched it up, and that was his whole deal. And I loved that. The simplicity of it was really great. Here it's like, oh, you know, he grew up in an orphanage, and it's like, oh my God, that's so tragic and sad. But interspersed with that, there's some hilarious stuff with the weird like Rube Goldberg devices like throughout his gigantic cave. You know, some great sight gags with his dog Max, and a big fat reindeer that becomes part of the team for a little while. That's a lot of fun. The Whoville story, it gets fleshed out a little bit more. Cindy Lou, her whole deal for wanting to meet Santa springs from a desire to do right by her mom Donna, who's apparently a single mom and I think a nurse. Like that's the implication that we're given for reasons that aren't entirely clear, especially since I have some real big questions about the economy in Whoville and you know how you know the like, is it, I assume it's hospitality driven, but for them to really commit to the holiday bit as thoroughly as they do, it raises some pretty serious questions. There's a wonderful bit with it's a sort of an ongoing bit with a neighbor who has determined that he is he's the Grinch's best friend. The Grinch is his best friend, voiced by Kenan Thompson, doing his standard Kenan Thompson old man voice. Angela Lansbury shows up as the mayor of Whoville at one point, which is kind of great.
All right.
And that's it. Like, and then he decides he puts his plan into motion to steal Christmas and steals Christmas. And, you know, like I don't think it's a spoiler to say, you know, he has some second thoughts about stealing Christmas, what with the heart and the sizes and whatnot.
And Max the dog.
And Max, who is as adorable as you want him to be. But I will say this version of the Grinch raised some particular questions for me. Tragic backstory, grew up in an orphanage, so he lost his parents at an early age. Lives in a giant cave, has apparently limitless resources, and a huge grasp of pretty complicated and exciting technology. I'm pretty sure the Grinch is Batman.
Ooh, wow.
Like, like I'm sitting there and like I'm two thirds of the way through the movie, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, and I kind of lean over to Sheridan and I'm like, is the Grinch Batman? And I haven't been able to stop thinking about it.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
But it's, I mean, just look, I mean, you know, do your own research, but I'm just saying, you know, if you look at it,
I'm not going to, you know what? Cause I've got my VHS of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. I'll be happy with that again.
It's, you know, and it's fun, you know, and, Pharrell is the narrator.
Okay.
And he's fine.
Sure.
Like, here's the thing. Like, nothing's ever going to replace, the original, certainly in my heart, in the hearts of you know, entire generations, but there is a significant cohort that has very fond, dare I say, inexplicably fond memories of the Jim Carrey live action movie. They do. And you know, and that was 18 years ago. So it's like, you know what, if this generation gets,
well, they need to watch that and Mike Myers' Cat in the Hat and go away someplace.
It's a chance. It's a chance for the next generation to get a Grinch of their own. And so maybe, just maybe, Jim Carrey and Ron Howard and the whole thing can just be gently slid into the dustbin of history, and we can just pretend it never happened.
I'm good with that.
Yeah,
I'll cooperate on my end.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan, who saw 3 for us this weekend, taking maybe 1 anyway for the team.
Maybe 1.5.
Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.